Hello and welcome to episode number 19 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded December 11th. My name is Elias Saba. I'm the guy who runs AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. As always, I stream live most Fridays. I actually missed last Friday. My schedule was kind of all messed up, so I couldn't get to stream live. But most Fridays, I stream live 1:30 p.m. Pacific, and always put up the episode the next day on Saturdays. You can watch the episodes on YouTube. As always, youtube.com/AFTVnews. You can subscribe via the RSS feed. You can subscribe on iTunes. I actually just added Stitcher. So it's, I think, stitcher.com/podcast/AFTVnewscast. I'm not sure. There'll be a link in the show notes. I'm also on TuneIn now. The URL is kind of a bit messed up there, so best to just search there. We got a bunch of nice stories to talk about this week. Of course, biggest story of the week is the launch of the add-on service for Amazon Prime Video. So we'll talk about that in detail, talk a little bit about shopping on the Fire TV, and then we'll talk about apps and deals and stuff. Before I move forward with the news, I just wanted to mention real quick that the last 2 weeks of December might not have a podcast episode. Still not sure. Just because it's going to be, on Christmas Day is when I would stream this, or when I would record, and then on New Year's Day. And so, those 2 days are going to be pretty hectic for me. So not sure if I'm going to have an episode that those 2 weeks. We'll have one next week, but last 2 weeks of the year may not have an episode. We'll try to maybe pre-record something if I can, but just don't know yet. But just wanted to give you guys a heads up real quick there. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the news. So biggest story of the week, obviously, is that Amazon has launched their add-on TV subscription service. So we talked about this briefly in, I think, 2 episodes ago when this information first leaked, or the rumors of this service first leaked, and I got a little word from my sources at Amazon about it, and they were pretty much spot on. So Showtime and Starz are the kind of headliner networks that are involved in this. So real briefly, this is a way to expand your Amazon Prime Video library. So you have to be an Amazon Prime member to have access to these add-on services. So if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can pay a little bit extra, between $2.99 or $9.95, I believe the prices are right now, to basically add a collection of videos to your Amazon Prime library. Now, these are monthly subscriptions, and the idea is that the video library will keep changing every month. So a lot of the TV shows that are involved here are ongoing, airing right now. So as new episodes air, they'll be added to the service. So this isn't just kind of like Prime, where it's a static library that just occasionally changes. Amazon tends to add, a dozen or two videos to Prime, but these subscription services will be adding, more videos more frequently. So there isn't any live television involved here. This is all on-demand content, either movies or TV shows. Amazon has said that TV shows will hit this service pretty quickly after they air live on TV. I don't know exactly when. They haven't said, they'll be available the same minute, the same hour that they air live or not. But I would think that within a day or so, you'll see TV shows that air appear on this service. So all of the subscriptions have a free trial period, ranges between 7 days and 30 days, depending on the service. These are controlled by the actual content owners, not by Amazon. So content owners set the price and the video selection, and then Amazon just kind of handles the back end. So that's kind of the beauty of this service, is that Amazon is handling all of the technical side of things, and the content owners just basically have to provide the videos for Amazon and set a price, and then just forget about it. Amazon handles all the charging of the credit card. They handle all of the streams. They handle all of the devices that are supported. So it's really a way for, I would say, smaller services, smaller collections of content to be featured on Amazon's video platform, essentially. Big networks can kind of do this themselves. So HBO is probably the most obvious case, where they handle it themselves. They launched HBO Now earlier this year, and they have apps on all the different platforms. They're a massive network, one of the biggest. And so they can definitely handle all of this themselves. For smaller networks that don't have the resources to expand on a whole bunch of different devices, maybe they are only available on Android and iPhone, iTunes. They can't really create all the different smart TV platforms and apps. So this is a great way for those smaller networks or smaller niche collection of programs to basically become available to a lot more people. So Amazon is launching with 30 kind of partners initially. These are 30 different collections, basically 30 different add-on subscriptions Prime members can add. And they range in, you know, big name networks like Showtime and Stars. Again, those are kind of the anchor networks that everybody's heard of. Everybody's kind of eager to get. Both of those are available for $8.99, I believe it is. But then again, there are smaller collections like Screen Junkies, for example. It's a smaller team. They started as a YouTube channel. Now they're offering more premium shows. And so they have about four shows. Each one has, there's like 100 or so episodes available of their four shows. And they're available through this. And so this is one example of a collection of content that, you know, they're a smaller company, they're a smaller team that can't create an app for every single platform, everything, single smart TV, every single streaming box. So this is a great way for them to basically quickly expand the devices that they're available on. Going through the list somewhat quickly, shouldn't take too long. So Acacia TV is $6.99 per month. They're kind of a fitness network. They've got about 344 shows and movies available. Now, real quickly, I'll put a link in the show notes for anybody who's listening to this. It's probably easier to see it directly than to just listen. But this post that I created that has a summary of all of them, all the 30 options, the prices, the free trials, and the number of shows and movies. Now, the number of shows and movies here, it's not the number of episodes. You know, if it's a TV show, the number of episodes is not included in this. It's only the number of shows. You know, Amazon doesn't give an easy way to look up the total number of episodes plus the total number of movies. So just putting that out there, like, for example, once we get to Screen Junkies, it'll just list four or five shows, but really it's like over 100 episodes involved there. But just to put that out there. So again, Acacia TV, Acorn TV is $4.99, 319 shows. Con TV, $4.99 for a little over 600 shows. Sinfest is $4.99. So this one's interesting. So FlixFling is basically a streaming service. They charge, I think, about $8.99 or so a month, $7.99, something like that, for just access to their entire catalog. But they have partnered with Amazon here to be on this add-on service. But instead of just making their entire catalog available for, say, the same price, $8.99, they've actually chopped up their service into four, I believe, maybe five smaller collections of movies and TV shows, and then set kind of cheaper prices. So if, say, for example, you didn't want the entire FlixFling catalog and maybe you're only interested in their documentaries, you could just subscribe to only their documentaries. So this is just one example of how this is kind of, it's very flexible, you know, because Amazon's handling all the payments on their end, they're handling all the streams on their end. And so these guys, all they literally have to do is give Amazon the content, set their prices, you know, define their catalog, define which content is available for which price, and then it's just available. And Amazon will handle the subscription fees and renewals and all that stuff. So it's pretty neat. It's a pretty neat idea. I think it has a lot of potential. So again, this is Sinfest. It says uniquely curated collections of films and movies. So this one is $4.99 per month for about 100 or so shows and movies right now. Comedy Central has their lineup of stand-up comedies for $3.99 per month. So again, this is not all of Comedy Central's content. This isn't like a Comedy Central streaming package. This is just their stand-up comedy. And so if you're interested in that, you could just pay the $3.99 a month and have access to their 77 shows and movies. Curiosity Stream, it's kind of like a documentaries and that sort of stuff, $5.99 a month. Daring Docs are more documentaries. A lot of documentary packages in here. Doc Club, $6.99 a month. Docurama is $4.99 a month. Dove Channel here is $4.99 a month for about 600 or so shows. Docs, see, this is FlixFling's, kind of just FlixFling's documentaries. They're calling it Docs. Only $2.99 a month. Right now, there are only 28 shows and movies, so it's pretty low, but hopefully they'll be adding to that. Drama Fever is $3.99 a month. Fear Factory, $2.99. So this is just, you know, horror type programming. So again, if you're into that, you don't have to subscribe to a whole big collection just to get a few horror movies. You can just subscribe to these 50 shows and movies for $2.99 a month. Film Forum for $2.99 a month. Gaia, this one's a big one. So I've never really even heard of these guys. Gaia, it says yoga, meditation, documentaries, and original programming to expand your horizon. And so this is actually the biggest collection, over 1,000 shows and movies for $9.95 a month. You can check out Hoopla Kids. This is kids programming. So it's only five shows, but there are over 100 episodes in those five shows for $5.99 a month. I'll skim through this since it's taking a little longer here. But Indie Flicks, $2.99. Lifetime Movies, $3.99. Monsters and Nightmares, $2.99 a month. Nature Vision TV, Quello Concerts. So these guys actually have a separate app on the Fire TV, but here you can get it kind of integrated directly into the Fire TV. Ring TV, Showtime, like I said, this is the biggest one. So right now they've got a little over 600 shows and movies. Again, that number is actually low because, you know, of those 600 shows and movies, there are a lot of episodes of a lot of TV shows. You know, Showtime has a lot of TV programming, more so than movies. And so there's actually quite a bit of content in there for your $8.99 a month. Starz has over 800 TV shows and movies for $8.99. Screen Junkies, I mentioned previously. Shudder, $4.99. Smithsonian, so this one's actually interesting. Smithsonian Earth, $3.99 per month for the 17 movies and shows. Now, most of these I looked at are actually airing right now, so there's only like a few episodes of each show because these are live airing shows. And this content was not previously available on Amazon at all in any format. You couldn't buy these episodes individually, you couldn't get them on Prime or anyway. So this has actually brought more content into Amazon through this add-on service, because Smithsonian, they've got some apps, but you know, this content was not available because this content is so new. So that's one thing to take away from this. This is kind of, it's like a middle ground. So you've got Amazon Prime, and you've got services like Netflix, where you've got kind of an older catalog. But then on the other side of things, you've got new TV shows where, you know, you usually have to buy them individually, like $1.99 an episode, or subscribe to something like Hulu, where they're only available for a shorter period of time. And so this is kind of a way to get like a little middle ground. So the stuff that isn't like absolutely brand new, but it's also not stuff that's, you know, the older catalog that you'd find in Amazon Prime. So this is a way of getting that kind of middle ground content that might not otherwise be available on something like the Fire TV. Continuing on the list, Tribeca Shortlist, $4.99 per month. Urban Movie Channel says quality urban content showcasing feature films, documentaries, original series, stand-up comedy, and more. This one's $4.99 a month. They've got about 150 or so shows and movies. And then last up, Warriors and Gangsters. This is another kind of smaller piece of the Flix Fling service. So here you've basically got like action movies, essentially fighting movies. So right now they're offering 45 different shows and movies for $2.99 per month. So the nice thing about this is that all of these have a free trial. And so if you're flipping through the Amazon kind of catalog and you see a movie or something you want to watch, I mean, just to get the free trial is usually right around the cost of, you know, buying or renting that one individual movie. So it kind of makes sense to just go ahead and add this add-on service just to take advantage of that free trial. We'll talk about canceling the free trial in a second here, but it's really simple to do. So all of that is well and good, but the big question is, how does this work on the Fire TV? So the service is not fully featured, integrated into the Fire TV at this point. If you saw, I wrote a post earlier this week, just before this service was announced, that my source told me that we'll see a software update come at the start of next year, probably in January, that actually adds full integration of this add-on service into the Fire TV. Now, that said, all of the content within these add-on packages can be viewed on the Fire TV fully. But the thing we're going to see added to the Fire TV is the ability to browse, you know, just your subscriptions, for example, the ability to subscribe directly onto the Fire TV. Those are not there right now. But essentially what Amazon is doing is it's kind of tricking the Fire TV into thinking you own this content. So for example, if you subscribe to something like Showtime, all of the movies that are available in that Showtime subscription, the Fire TV thinks you now own all of that content. And that's how it's able to let you stream all of it. Now, you can't just go to a Showtime section and see all of the content that's available and kind of pick and choose out of your subscription. You kind of have to already know what's available, or you have to search for something. Or really the best way is to actually go to the Amazon website or bring up the Amazon's app on your smartphone. Find the content that way, because those apps and the website have been updated and you can see like only Amazon's content and see, you know, sort by ratings and all that stuff. And so it's a lot easier to find and pick and choose what you want to watch there, and then go to the Fire TV and just search for it directly, and then it'll pop up. It'll be available to watch, you know, without buying it, without doing anything extra. And so for those watching the video version of the podcast, you can see here screenshots of what it looks like. So essentially, again, there's no real indication on the Fire TV that this service has been added, other than occasionally you'll see a banner at the top kind of advertising the service. And when you click that banner, it just takes you to a single page on the Fire TV that kind of tells you, go to amazon.com/video subscriptions, and that's where you can add subscriptions. And once you add a subscription, you have to go into the settings of the Fire TV and force a sync. The Fire TV itself will eventually sync and realize that now you have access to all this content. But, you know, if you want it like immediately to show up, you have to go into the settings and just do a quick force sync. It's the very last setting. So if you go to settings and at the very end, there's my account. And in there, there's just an option to sync. It takes a second. And then the Fire TV now knows you have access to all of that content that you just subscribed to. So there are some quirks to this whole thing on the Fire TV. So, for example, I'm showing here on the video version that the Smithsonian content, because it was not previously available on Amazon in any way, so you can't actually buy this content, you can't rent this content, the only way to view it is to subscribe to the Smithsonian add-on service. If you try to bring up that content, or if you're browsing the Fire TV's, you know, catalog, and you bring up that content and you're not subscribed, the episodes actually say episode unavailable. And it's kind of odd because there's no other option, there's no option to find out more information about how to get this content. It's just unavailable. So it's a little quirky right now, just because, you know, it's in this kind of middle phase where it's sort of supported on the Fire TV, but not fully. I'm sure Amazon will address this. You know, I bet down the line, this will say watch for free because of the free trial. Or if, you know, you have subscribed before and canceled, it'll tell you, you know, subscribe now for $2.99, that sort of stuff. So this stuff will be updated later. Here's a little example of what it looks like when you subscribe. So this is a Showtime series, Homeland, one of their most popular shows. So when you're not subscribed, it just says watch now with Showtime 30-day free trial. Now that refers to their actual individual app. That doesn't refer to this add-on service. But once you actually subscribe to it, that watch 30-day free trial thing and all the buying options basically just disappear. And now you just have a watch now button that shows up on the Fire TV interface. So same thing goes for movies. So this movie here, I'm showing The Giver. It's a Showtime movie, or it's a movie that's available through Showtime's subscription. And so if you're not subscribed to Showtime and you search for this movie, you'll get the usual selection of, you know, install the Showtime app if you want to access it, or you could buy it, or you can rent it, and so forth. But if you subscribe, you'll actually get in the top right, you'll see here there's an option, or not an option, there's a little green banner that says you own this video. And you don't really actually own the video. You're just, now that you're subscribed, the Fire TV thinks you own the video because it's giving you access to it. And so you could just watch it now without paying anything if you're subscribed. Now, I don't know if they added this feature after the fact or not, because I didn't notice it at first, but it was Vulcan 6195 that actually pointed this out in the comments of this post here, where on the Fire TV home screen, once you've actually subscribed to one of the add-on services, there'll actually be a new column on the home screen that basically highlights the top movies and TV shows within that subscription. So here I'm subscribed to the Showtime add-on, and so there's a Showtime featured movies and TV. And so this is basically the only way to kind of browse just the add-on content. Now, it's not the full content. There's no way to sort or anything. Like here, they are showing basically 74 different TV shows and movies that are available through the Showtime add-on. You know, these are kind of the featured top content. And so obviously there's over, you know, 600 different TV shows and movies, and you don't have a way to browse all of it on the Fire TV. But it's kind of a nice little, again, middle ground while they're working on that software update. But something to look out for. So once you do have that, and hopefully these featured lists will get updated occasionally. So until they actually release that software update that really adds this full featured option to the Fire TV, this is one way to actually see just that content. So I mentioned briefly how it's pretty easy to cancel. So I decided to put up this little how to cancel an add-on Prime Video subscription. Just to show, one of the features Amazon is actually highlighting is how easy it is for for anybody to cancel. You don't have to call in. It's not complicated in any way, basically. It takes three clicks. So when you log into Amazon, you'll see from the Your Account menu, you'll see a Your Video Subscriptions link. And that basically takes you to a page that shows a list of all of the add-ons that you've subscribed to. And each one will have a cancel button. Click the cancel button. You'll get a little pop-up kind of confirming that you want to cancel. And then click cancel again and you're done, basically. Just three clicks and you're canceled. So the really nice thing is that when you cancel, you don't actually lose access to the movies and TV shows for the subscription immediately. You lose it either after the free trial period is done, or say you're, you know, in the middle of a month, you'll lose it when it is going to renew next. So the nice thing is you can literally, you know, when you're browsing the Fire TV, if you see a movie or a TV show that you want to watch and it's available on the add-on service, you can start your subscription, whether it's a free trial or whether it's paid, and then you can literally immediately go in, cancel the subscription, and then you can still go in and watch all of the content. If basically you want to just try it out without worrying about forgetting to cancel later or, you know, that sort of stuff. I know that's a concern with some people. So very simple to cancel if you want. So I think it's definitely worth giving this a shot, especially if there's some movie or something that you've been wanting to watch, don't have access to it in any other way. So I did want to talk a little bit about Amazon's press release for this service. Now, I usually don't talk about press releases, but this one actually is a little bit telling in my opinion. I feel like Amazon is kind of just starting with this service. I think it's going to expand. And, you know, my source at Amazon has told me that many more TV networks and many more content collections are coming to the service. This is just kind of the first step. These are just kind of the 30 launch subscriptions. Now, I mentioned the press release because the press release is titled Amazon Announces the Streaming Partners Program. Now, to me, that is basically, this is them announcing this service to content holders, not to content consumers like us. So you would think that Amazon would announce this as being Amazon expands their, you know, video library, or Amazon now offers TV networks onto their Prime Video. But no, that's not how they're kind of advertising this. They're basically advertising this new program to the content holders first, not to the consumers first. And so looking here in this press release, you know, these first bullet points that they highlight, these are bullet points for content owners, you know, driving all subscriber acquisition, making subscribing friction-free, handling all customer service. These are things that the content owners, you know, HBO, CBS, AMC, whatever it is, these are things that they care about. You know, you don't care about the fact that Amazon's handling the customer service and not HBO or not AMC. The way I see this service and the way it seems like Amazon's handling the service right now is that this is just step one in kind of their bigger plan for Prime Video and add-on subscriptions. So they're launching this. I have a feeling down the line when the Fire TV software update comes that really fully integrates this service into the Fire TV, I have a feeling that we'll see like another big announcement of new partners. So I think they're putting this out there right now. They're hoping probably in the next month and a half, 2 months or so, whatever it takes for them to get that software down on the Fire TV. I bet you they're going to try to get as many more deals as they can. And we're going to probably see another bigger announcement about more services coming out, and then that'll be kind of when they really push the service towards their customers. I mean, they are pushing it right now. Obviously, if you go to Amazon.com, you'll see a big banner on the front, and if you go to Amazon Video, this is very heavily advertised there. But overall, they're not pushing this as much as I thought they would. I think that's because they're just getting things rolling. And so the biggest complaint I saw about this service is the content selection. You know, people want the world with this stuff. They want HBO. They want, you know, I saw some people mentioning Netflix, but you know, those services are probably, they're big enough to where they can handle this stuff on their own. It's smaller services that hopefully we'll see. You know, I want to see things like AMC added. I want to see, you know, USA, I don't know, TNT, TBS, those kind of networks. I'm hoping to see CBS added. That would be pretty awesome. I know we just got a CBS app added to the Fire TV, but you know, Showtime is owned by CBS, so it makes sense that since Showtime was added, we'll see CBS. Hopefully, you know, a lot more content added to this. All right, moving on to the next bit of Fire TV news. So Amazon has kind of expanded ever so slightly their shopping options and feature on the Fire TV. If you remember from, I don't know, a dozen or so podcasts back, I talked about the shopping feature coming to the Fire TV. And so Amazon is still working on a full-fledged shopping aspect to the Fire TV that'll let you really browse Amazon products and shop right on the Fire TV. I know a lot of people are not too thrilled about this. They just think of it as a way for Amazon to make more money off of Fire TV owners, but I do a lot of Amazon shopping. I myself am looking forward to this because, you know, you can pretty much ignore it if you want, but it should be a nice feature. About a month or two ago, they basically added occasionally running a little banner at the top in their little banner area on the Fire TV home screen, the option to buy certain products on the Fire TV. I know they were advertising toys. I know they were advertising some electronics. I know the Echo was there, the Fitbit was there, and they were even selling Halloween candy at one point because they kind of introduced this sort of feature when right before Halloween came. Now they've kind of expanded to music also. So now they're featuring a new banner at the top that showcases these 20 top albums that you can buy. And of course, with it being December and it being the holiday shopping months, it makes sense that Amazon's kind of expanding this. So just wanted to highlight it real quick. Here's what it looks like for those watching the video version of the podcast. Basically, it's just a little banner at the top that shows up. And when you click it, it takes you to this page where it's a carousel of 20 or so albums. And you can select one of the albums. And the interface is very similar to the previous interface. You can look at the album, read the features, see the images, look at reviews, that sort of stuff. One thing I thought that was interesting is that, so there's a format option for the album, but if you select the MP3 digital version of the album, you're not allowed to buy that one through the Fire TV. And so that one's really interesting because you would think that that would be the more popular option because you're sitting there on the Fire TV. If you buy the album MP3 format, then you can just go to the Amazon's Fire TV's music section and just start streaming the album immediately because any albums you buy from Amazon will become available in the Fire TV's music section. So I actually think that the reason they're not letting you buy MP3 digital versions of these albums through this little Fire TV shopping feature is because they're probably working on a full-fledged music store for the Fire TV. And they probably don't want to confuse people with different buying options for digital music on the Fire TV. This is completely my guess. I don't have any sources for this. I haven't heard anything about this. I would have definitely posted about it had I heard something about it. But I think for sure down the line, we're going to see the music store come to the Fire TV where you can actually shop for music. Possibly they're going to release that with the full-fledged Amazon shopping store. You know, you can go to shopping and then from there you can either choose actual physical CDs or digital music. This is my guess, but I just thought it was a little interesting that they don't have the digital music option on the Fire TV yet. All right, let's move on to some app news. So one of the big new apps that arrived this week, actually just today actually, was the NBC Sports Live Extra app. So this app brings NBC's live sports coverage to the Fire TV. Now, unfortunately, it does require a traditional cable subscription to activate most of the content in this app. There is a bit of content that you can just stream for free through the app without actually having to have a subscription or to have to activate it. But essentially the app is divided into three sections. So they've got their live and upcoming section. So they'll show you different games and different events that are coming up. You know, when those go live, they'll actually stream live through the app. The other section is for replays. So they're actually showing older games and older events kind of on demand that you can stream through this app. And lastly, they've got highlights. So, you know, traditional news coverage that kind of highlights the best of a game or the best events that happen. It's one of the few options for actual live sports on the Fire TV. So it's really nice to see that it was added. I know Fox Sports has a pretty good app on the Fire TV, but now NBC is kind of getting into this game. So really nice to see that NBC is showing the Fire TV some love. They released their NBC News app a little while ago. They've announced that an actual NBC, you know, watching app is going to come out that'll let you watch their TV shows. And on that NBC app that's supposed to come, a lot of the shows, maybe even the majority, are going to be ad supported. So you won't actually have to activate to watch a lot of the NBC shows that are going to be available through their NBC app. We don't know exactly when that's going to arrive. They just said that back when they released, I think it was the iOS version of their NBC app, they said that the Fire TV was going to be the next one that they're going to work on. So hopefully we'll see that very soon. But a nice selection of apps coming from NBC to the Fire TV, which is always pretty awesome. Next up in new apps is a trio of three apps, one from Food Network, one from HGTV, and one from Travel Channel. Now, again, similar to the NBC Sports app, these have to be activated to really access the majority, if not all, the content through these apps. So these are not really cord-cutting type apps. These are more just getting your cable subscription access through the Fire TV. Still great to see these apps available. The nice thing is all three of these apps provide live programming as well as on-demand access to all of the shows that these networks have. So that's kind of pretty rare. A lot of times when these apps are released, they only do on-demand content just because live is a lot harder to do. But these guys have actually done live pretty well. So there's a bit of an oddity with these apps. So they appeared in the App Store very briefly and then they just disappeared. So if you try to go searching for them, they don't actually come up. If you actually go to Amazon's website, they don't actually come up. At one point they were coming up, like they actually had a product page on Amazon, just like any other app, but right now they're just not there. Maybe by the time you're listening to this or watching this, they'll actually have come back. But for whatever reason, maybe they weren't supposed to be released at this point. Maybe there was an error that they found, some bug that they wanted to pull the apps and fix. I don't know, for whatever reason, they're not available. But if you go to the apps section of the Fire TV and you scroll down, there are these spotlight sections on the Fire TV's interface. So if you're watching the video version, you'll see it here. But if you scroll through the spotlight section, even till today, there are highlighted kind of cards for all three of these apps. And you can actually install the apps that way. So you can actually search for them. You can actually find them and install them remotely through Amazon.com. But you can find them on this spotlight section for the time being. I have a feeling this is a mistake. So the apps were pulled from the kind of main app store for the Fire TV for whatever reason. And I have a feeling they just kind of forgot to pull these spotlight cards, highlights for these apps, but you can install them. I've installed them. The apps work just fine. Maybe they were waiting for some announcement later on, and that's why they pulled these apps. Whatever reason it is, it's a little difficult to find them right now, but Food Network, HGTV, and Travel Channel all have apps. They work pretty nicely on the Fire TV if you can find them. Next up for new apps that came out this week, GoPro Channel released an app. So this is an official app from GoPro. Now, this might be an odd app to highlight just because, you know, GoPro's is a camera manufacturer. So if they release an app, it's going to be advertising their cameras, of course. But GoPro actually pays for a lot of really good, you know, extreme sports content. And so this app is actually full of a lot of great video, a lot of great content to watch if you're into that sort of stuff. So definitely worth checking it out. Yeah, they do have a product section in the app and it does highlight their cameras that you can purchase and that sort of stuff. But the video is actually pretty awesome. You can actually sort the videos by activity. So if you're only looking for, I don't know, BMX or skateboarding stuff or surfing stuff or skydiving stuff, you know, you can easily search for the activity that you want to watch there. But definitely, if you're looking for something to watch, load up this app. It's free. You can, you know, watch a lot of pretty nice cinematography in these apps. Moving on to some interesting games that came out for the Fire TV this week. Just two quickly to highlight. First one being Mechanic Escape. Now, this game actually had a lot of success on PCs about a year ago or so. And now they finally made their way to the mobile platforms, basically Android, iOS, and that sort of stuff. And thankfully, they've added a Fire TV app. Now, this is a kind of a side-scrolling platformer type game. Think like the Mario series where you're running around. It's a very high action game. You're actually being chased by creatures and stuff, and there's a lot of emphasis on running through the maps really quickly. There's 80 levels in this game. They are having a sale right now just to kind of highlight their transition to the mobile platform. So you can get the game for $1.99 and it'll go up to $2.99, I believe they said, on Christmas Day or so. That's when the sale is going to end. So if you're interested in this game, check it out right now. You'll get basically 33% off of it. Next and last app that I'll highlight is this game, Snowboard Party 2. This is the sequel to Snowboard Party. That game was pretty popular on the Fire TV, one of the more popular games there. So if you like that game, the second version seems to be even better. 50 unique tricks, 21 different courses you can play. You know, your average kind of snowboarding game where you're going through the course, doing the tricks. Pretty fun. Graphics look really, really good on this game. So definitely worth checking out there. As always, you can find a link in the show notes to all of the games, all of the apps, all the articles that I'm talking about for you to check out more in depth. All right, next up, let's talk a little briefly about the deals that came along this week. Again, it's the holiday shopping season, so we're going to see a lot of deals that take place this week. So the Fire TV itself went on sale at the start of this week for $84.99. Now, obviously, that's not as good as the $74.99 price that we saw during the Black Friday Cyber Monday weekend. But for anybody who might have missed that, this gives you a 15% off, essentially, of the Fire TV. Now, this is part of Amazon's 12 days of deals that they're doing. I think we're at around day five, day six, somewhere like that. So I would expect that this deal will go on for about another week, probably up until Christmas or very close to Christmas. So if you're still looking to get a Fire TV, either for a gift or for yourself, $84.99, still a great price for this box. So this deal I definitely wanted to mention is pretty awesome. It's basically $5 for free to spend on Amazon for doing almost nothing. Amazon is basically trying to advertise their Amazon Underground app store, app service. And so there are a select few apps where if you install those apps, if you purchase, and I do that in quotes, if you purchase one of the free apps, they'll basically give you just $5 for free to use on Amazon. And so there's almost very little reason not to do this. You'll have to look in the show notes for the apps that you'll have to purchase. One of them is this Charlie Brown Christmas app. I forget the other one, but basically you don't even have to install the app. All you have to do is click it. And from the deliver to, select cloud only. And once you actually just quote buy the app for free, they will send you an email with $5 free to use on Amazon. Now the $5 does not show up in your Amazon balance, but when you go to check out any product that is actually sold by Amazon, so they say quote any eligible item sold and shipped by Amazon. So it can't be a third party that's selling the item, but you know, when you go to check out, you'll see basically a $5 credit on the checkout page listed as, I think, Amazon Underground promo or something like that. So definitely wanted to mention this. I don't know how long this promo is going to go for, so you should get on it quickly if you haven't already. Next up, in app deals, very quickly, this game, it's not the best game in the world, but it's being offered for free, so I thought I'd mention it. The game is called Two Wheels for Life. It's a little motocross kind of motorcycle track game, very simple graphics. But again, right now it's being offered for free. Normal price is $1.15. This is the first time this game has ever been offered for free. So I thought I'd mention it if anybody's interested in getting it. So next up, and really quickly, just before we start answering all the Fire TV questions that you guys have submitted, I wanted to talk about little non-Fire TV news, but still related to the streaming industry. So Apple is kind of rumored right now to have put their internet TV service on hold. So we've talked about this before, where Apple's supposedly working on an internet TV service to rival Sling TV and Sony's Vue and maybe even Netflix and Amazon. But right now, the latest rumors from, both the CEO of CBS and Bloomberg sources have kind of confirmed that Apple decided to put their service on hold. It's been delayed, it seems, all year. Back in, I think, June is when we first heard about this service being worked on. Apple was talking to networks, trying to get them on board. Supposedly, Apple was wanting about a dozen or so, maybe a little more than a dozen, big name live networks to be in this service for roughly around $30 a month. That's what they were shooting for, from what I heard. And it looks like they are not able to get those deals. We know Amazon has kind of been rumored to be working on a live TV service also. That's something separate from the new add-on subscription service. You know, again, that service, the new add-on service from Amazon, is not live content at all. But Amazon might actually be releasing something live, you know, in the coming year. They're at least talking to networks about it, but it seems like live is the toughest thing to do. The networks want a lot of money for their live content, and Apple could not get them to budge, it seems, and so they decided to put this on hold. But just want to put that out there, let you guys know, keep you guys updated on the, you know, streaming media world. All right, let's get into the questions and answers portion of the episode. So as always, at the end of the episode, I answer a whole bunch of questions that have been submitted by listeners and viewers of the podcast. So every Thursday, I put up a post on AFTVnews.com asking people to submit their questions. I also take questions live while I'm streaming this episode at AFTVnews. You can always tweet me live if you're watching live. We've got first question here coming from DVJ. He says, you think we will ever get a true native auto-switching 24Hz support in Fire TV like the NVIDIA Shield can do. I honestly don't think we will. The Fire TV is kind of, they're concentrating more so, it seems, Amazon, that is, you know, Amazon's developers and the hardware team, they concentrate more so on broad features that affect, you know, as many people as possible. So, you know, they have a limited team and they have to figure out where they're going to devote their time. And they probably got a whole bunch of features coming that we don't even know about. I have a feeling it seems that, you know, the 24Hz issue is not high on their list, you know, because most people aren't even aware that that's even an option. They don't even know the whole pull down issue. It's just very technical, you know. It's only like, you know, audio files, you know, video files like you guys that really care about these features. So unfortunately, I don't think Amazon is really going to pay much attention to that. So if you want that pristine, perfect one-to-one 24Hz for your video, the Fire TV is probably not going to be the device for you. Next question here is from Richie Z on Twitter. He says, do you see some partners joining their content together and have one set price for content? He's referring to the Amazon add-on service. I don't see it as a way to group a bunch of content together, that's for sure. I actually see it the other way around. I see this service as the ideal place for content providers to chop up their content and offer very niche programming. So if USA has a whole bunch of documentaries that they might produce, and they have their own original dramas or they have their comedies, I could see them offering each one for a separate subscription, because somebody who watches a lot of comedies isn't necessarily somebody who watches a lot of documentaries. You know, it's a very different audience. And so this is kind of the perfect service for content creators or content owners to basically offer their programming in different subscriptions, just because that's kind of the way Amazon is doing things. They're making it just add things, remove things at will. You know, they're making it very easy. So I think that's the way this service is going to go. I don't see it as a way for a huge content owner to just put all their content in one big, you know, $20 subscription, for example, something like that. That's definitely not where I see this as going. Next question here is from UK Channel Guide on Twitter. He says, what do you think of the news that Apple TV 4th gen, the new one, now has 2,624 apps, average 447 per week since launch? Great topic. I definitely glad you brought that up. I was tempted to write about it myself, but it's not that relevant to the Fire TV, so that's why I kind of skipped it. But we can definitely talk about it here. I'm not surprised at all. Apple's App Store is just so massive. You know, it's the biggest App Store. It's got the highest quality apps. I'm talking about their iPhone, iOS App Store, not the TV App Store. So just because their iOS App Store is massive, you know, iPhone has the best app library, in my opinion. iPad has the best tablet library, in my opinion. And so it's no surprise that just the huge number of developers that are developing for Apple, that a lot of those will trickle over into the new Apple TV. So I'm not surprised that they jumped so quickly to 2,624 or so apps. The Fire TV is right around 4,400 apps or so, I think, 4,300 apps. But, you know, I mentioned this previously in a podcast, and I wrote a post about it. Total app count is really meaningless nowadays, because it's more about the quality than the quantity. I always say this. Every week we see somewhere around 20 to 50 or even 70 new apps released for the Fire TV, and I'll post about two or three of those apps on the site, because really, that's how many are even worth your time and worth looking at, is because there's a lot of junk out there. And, you know, I have a feeling these 2,624 apps, vast majority are going to be junk, just like on the Fire TV, just like on Roku's channels. It doesn't matter. It most important is the quality of apps. I did say when the Apple TV first came out, and I talked about it on the podcast, that I think the Apple TV will probably have the best app ecosystem over the Fire TV. You know, the really big names are going to come to all the devices, but it's the little kind of niche apps. So you might end up getting like this fun little niche game on the Apple TV that won't come to the Fire TV. But as far as big streaming media services go, yeah, they'll probably come to the Apple TV first, but they'll eventually trickle down to the Fire TV, in my opinion, and eventually Android TV and Chromecast and that sort of stuff. All right, let's move on to some questions that have been submitted in the topic post that I post every week. So first question here is from AJ. He says, Llama does not work on the new Fire TV. Any updates on this? I mentioned this before in the past. It seems like the Llama developer has just abandoned the app altogether. I just recently went to their website, and they hadn't, like, they've got a little blog section that kind of talks about apps and or features of Llama, and they haven't posted anything in about a year now. So it just seems like they've completely abandoned the app. For those who don't know, a lot of people are using Llama as a way to launch Kodi or launch sideloaded apps from the home screen. You could use Llama to set it so that when you launch a specific app, it actually launches a different app. And so people would just basically set some random app that they weren't using as their Kodi launcher app. Icono TV was a popular one. Classic TV was another one that was popular. I don't know if that one's still available. But essentially, Llama does not work on newer versions of Android and the new Fire TV, which is running Android 5.1. Llama just does not work. That feature, the launching feature, does not work. And so we're just not going to see Llama support, most likely, just because Llama developers have abandoned the app. And so it doesn't work fully featured with newer versions of Android. Next question here is from Robert J. Defendi. He says, I'm interested in moving to digital films over Blu-ray, but Blu-ray is the only way I can reliably get director's commentary. I know iTunes has started including them, but they don't work on the original Apple TV. I can't see how to tell if a Prime Video with bonus features has commentary and if they work on my Fire TV first gen. Discuss. Director's commentary and like extra features like that, it's almost like a lost art, you know. It feels like it's going to be a relic of the DVD Blu-ray days as we move on. Definitely these streaming services are not really concentrating on these. Amazon, I mean, very rarely will offer bonus features in their videos. So there's definitely no easy good way to see it on the Fire TV. If you want those, you're going to have to stick to physical media like DVDs and like Blu-rays. Maybe down the line we'll see one of these companies release support. But the problem with getting, you know, director's commentary and bonus features on streaming platforms is that all the content owners have to basically agree on some type of standard. You know, like MKVs, for example, they will support additional audio tracks. They'll support features like this where you can add more, you can add a menu into it, but these platforms have to also agree on it. So it's like all the different streaming services and all the different boxes all have to kind of agree on a platform, on a standard for these extra features to videos for them to come. And it's very difficult to get these companies to really talk. And it doesn't seem like it's that important to most people these days. It was definitely nice back, you know, when DVDs first became popular. It was a huge feature of DVDs over VHS where you can actually get extra content on there, just because it was the first time you actually could get a menu in your viewing experience. But overall, I don't think there's going to be ever an easy way to see this stuff on the Fire TV. Next set of questions here from Steve Klein. He's actually got two questions. First one, why do some ISPs now charge their customers more if they exceed certain monthly internet data limits, yet have no such restriction on the amount of cable television their customers can watch each month? Don't both television and internet data travel over the same cables? Why the difference? I mean, I can't really begin to know exactly why, but ultimately it just comes down to money. They do data caps because they can, essentially. To specifically answer why they don't do it for cable TV, but they do it for internet when they travel along the same pipes, essentially. My theory would be that with cable TV, they can actually charge for packages, you know, so if you want just a little bit, they can charge you for that. If you want a lot of content, they can charge you more for that. But that isn't necessarily the case with internet, especially because of net neutrality, basically not letting them chop up the internet, thankfully. So really, data caps are their only way to kind of get more money out of certain customers that, you know, require more. It's just the way things are going. The ISPs don't want to be just, you know, quote, dumb pipes. They don't want to just give you, you know, for one flat fee, give you everything. They want to try to charge you more. It's just the way things are going to go, I think. But if you're looking for like a technical reason why they're doing this, there is no technical reason. It's just their only way they can make more money, essentially. All right, Steve's second question is, are there ways to watch programs on the Amazon Fire TV box and economize on the amount of data we consume while doing so? For instance, I believe that watching just 1 hour of Amazon Prime Video streaming HD consumes about 3 gigabytes of data. With that figure in mind, it explains why it is so easy to exceed the monthly limits some ISPs are imposing on their customers. So before I get into answering the actual question, I'm curious about that 3 gigabyte figure. So I know Amazon requires 3.5 megabit per second internet as their kind of minimum recommendation for HD. So if you figure 3.5 megabit per second, multiply that by 60 to get to megabit per minute, multiply that by 60, get megabit per hour, divide that by 8 to get megabyte, and then divide by 1024 to get to gigabyte per hour. So 1.5 gigabyte per hour, and you figure that's minimum. So I could see 3 gigabytes being essentially the average. Let's say if you're at a 5 megabit per second stream, which I think is pretty common for an HD file, times 60 to get to minutes, times 60 to get to hour. So that's megabit per hour, divide 8 megabytes per hour, divide 1024 to get to gigabytes. Yeah, okay. So yeah, three gigabytes per hour of HD content seems probably about average. So if you're streaming at 5 megabits, you're going to see about 2.2 or so gigabytes an hour. So that figure does seem accurate. I know Amazon says their 4K stream, for those interested, is minimum of 15 megabits. So, you know, multiply that by 3 for the 2.2, so 6.6 gigabytes minimum per hour of 4K. That's pretty, yeah, that'll reach your data caps pretty quickly. Going back to your actual question, there are no real easy ways to limit the amount of data you're using when you're streaming Amazon Video. Amazon does not provide any kind of options there. Netflix does. I don't know if they still do. I haven't looked in a while, but I know Netflix lets you, by default, set to auto, but they let you choose low, medium, or high quality. And so if you set low, it'll kind of force the stream to be a lower quality, and that'll reduce the amount of data you use. Amazon does not have any kind of feature like that. There is an option if you go into your Amazon media settings on their website. I'll find it and put a link in the show notes for those interested. But there is an option to disable auto next. That basically, when you're watching on the Fire TV TV show and the TV show finishes, it will automatically start playing the next episode. So you can disable that. There's no option on the Fire TV itself, but you could do it on Amazon's website. So if you're worried about your data caps, I definitely say go and disable that feature at the very least. That way, if you happen to like be watching a TV show and you fall asleep, it doesn't just keep streaming the next episode one after another. There is no easy way to limit your data usage for Amazon. Your only real option is to get a router that has those features built in, so you can figure out which IP address your Fire TV is connecting as and set a data rate limit with the router. And so if the Fire TV does not have access to your full-blown internet speed, it will automatically reduce the quality of the video and therefore use less data. So that's really your only option, your best option. A lot of newer routers are actually having this feature now, and so that's my recommendation. But unfortunately, there is no easy way to limit the amount of data you're using on the Fire TV. All right, next question here is from Ka. He says, we have a Leaf 4K 6x6 matrix with HD base T from Control 4. The only known issue is with Amazon 4K player, no display on 1080p TVs. Control 4 tech guys saying it is using outdated 4K protocols. Control 4 said we have not had reports of other 4K players having issues. So I'm not familiar too much with this hardware. It sounds like it's a HDMI switch that basically distributes your video to several sources, either in the house or in something. It sounds like pretty high-end equipment, but I'll try to talk about why maybe it might not be working based on some quirks that the Fire TV does. It probably has to do with that. So the first thing I can think of is that the Fire TV has a 1.4 HDMI port, so version 1.4, yet it uses HDCP 2.2, which is the newer DRM. So that could possibly be related to why this isn't working. I mean, I'm not going to know how to fix it, that's for sure, but I can only kind of give you some guidance to where you can look into. So the reason I say it's a little bit of a quirk is because most HDCP 2.2 devices use an HDMI 2.0 port. A lot of people actually mistakenly think that HDCP 2.2 requires HDMI 2.0, but that's actually not the case. So the Fire TV, since it does 4K at only 30 frames per second, they could get away with only using a 1.4 HDMI port. HDMI 2.0 is what takes 4K up to 60 frames per second, and since the Fire TV is not capable of doing that, they didn't need to do an HDMI 2.0 port. So possibly your hardware is expecting an HDMI 2.0 device. I don't know. Even I mean, even though HDMI 2.0 is backwards compatible with 1.4, it's possible that it's seeing HDMI 1.4 and thinking it doesn't need to do HDCP. Again, I'm just spitballing here. I have no idea if this is has anything to do with your issue, but just let you know. So that's one thing. The other thing is you mentioned that you're seeing issues on 1080p TVs. So the Fire TV has to detect the display device. And so if you're connecting it to a 4K equipment, it might not be detecting things correctly. And so it's actually sending 4K to 1080p TVs. This is, again, just a wild guess here. So the way the Fire TV works is when it displays everything in 1080p, 60 frames per second. And by everything, I mean apps and interfaces and that stuff. But then when you actually start a 4K video, it does a resolution switch. And so possibly your hardware is not handling the resolution switch correctly. I do know in the latest software update, Amazon added some bug fix that some devices, some AV receivers were not being detected as 4K. That could have to do with it. Again, it's really tough to say what exactly is causing it, but I have a feeling it's going to be either DRM related. And if that's the case, you can actually buy little HDMI splitters that essentially strip out the DRM, the HDCP DRM. They're not supposed to do that, but they kind of do. If you search Amazon, you can kind of read comments and see people talking about that stuff. They're not advertised as being that kind of device, but a lot of them do that. They're usually fairly inexpensive. You could just kind of buy one just to try it out. So that's one thing. It's probably DRM related, or it is related to the actual port or the resolution switching, that is. So since the Fire TV does this resolution switch when you switch from 1080p to 4K. These are my best guesses. I know it doesn't really answer your question, but maybe it'll lead you to the right solution down the line. All right, next set of questions here from Jim. First off, he says, I'm wondering if putting the Fire TV 4K or any streaming device in vertical or any other position other than the intended position may harm the device. So for the Fire TV, it really won't matter. The only thing you really have to worry about position-wise is heat. There are no moving parts in the Fire TV, so you don't have to worry about that kind of positioning. Like, for example, if there was a spinning drive in the device, then moving it into different positions may affect the way that drive works. But with the Fire TV, everything is solid state. Nothing is moving, so you don't have to worry there. The only thing you might have concern with is heat. Essentially, the top of the Fire TV, you know, under the plastic casing, the top is basically just one massive heatsink. And so all of that heat is basically rising off of the top of the Fire TV. And so if you put it off to the side, now you've got all of the heat rising off the side of the Fire TV, what is now the top, but what is normally the side. And so it's a smaller footprint. And so possibly the heat is not escaping as easily. Again, I don't think this would be an issue. I wouldn't personally be worried about positioning the Fire TV sideways myself. Do be careful with, you mentioned other streaming devices, something like the Roku 4, which actually has a fan in it and actually has vents. Those I would be a lot more worried about positioning in something other than just regular flat the way it's expected, because they're designed for actual airflow through the device, whereas the Fire TV, it's a completely sealed device. They're just expecting radiant heat to go kind of through the heatsink and through the plastic. They're not actually relying on air to flow through the device. But with the Roku 4, airflow is an actual issue because there's an actual fan in there and there are actual vents. So be aware of where those vents are and make sure they're clear and easily, you know, accessible to air. All right, second question from Jim is also, how can I make it the default for newly downloaded apps to store on my micro SD instead of the internal storage? There's no option to actually select it yourself. There's no default to choose, so you can't actually do that. The Fire TV itself will kind of just decide for you whether to install a new app onto internal or external storage. For the most part, it'll usually install it onto external storage if you have a micro SD card inserted into the new Fire TV. I mean, one way you can kind of force it to go into external is to kind of load up the internal storage with some files. You know, you can transfer files onto the /SD card directory of the Fire TV. That's the internal storage. And so if you load files there, it'll be forced to put it on external. And kind of the other way, where if you keep the internal storage as empty as possible, it'll kind of force things to go into internal storage first, usually. but there's really no way to set a default, unfortunately. Third question here from Jim. He says, if an app is stored in a micro SD card, then would all the related info also be stored there too, and vice versa for the internal storage? Like when I'm playing a game, where would the saved info be stored? No, that's not actually the case. So apps and games on the Fire TV and any Android device basically have multiple options on where they store their files. The most commonly is there's a slash data directory, and that's where a lot of your user settings are stored. Most of your user settings, I would say. And so a lot of apps will store it there, and that's on the internal storage of the Fire TV and Android devices. Apps can also store things on external storage, like the micro SD card. So even when you move an app from internal storage to external storage, part of that app on the Fire TV will still live on internal storage. It doesn't all get moved over. This is why Amazon actually says that you cannot, for example, take an app, store it on external storage on the Fire TV, and then remove the micro SD card or thumb drive and put it into a different Fire TV and have access to that app or have access to those settings. That's not the way it works. If an app is stored on internal storage, it will completely be stored on internal storage. You don't have to worry about, you know, removing the micro SD card and not having access to that app. But definitely when you move an app to external storage, it does not mean that the app is entirely living on external storage. As far as where your saved info is for an app and for a game, that's up to the game developer themselves. There's no way to know for sure where it's going to be saved. It could be stored in the slash data directory. It could be stored in the slash SD card directory, which is still internal, or it could be stored in the actual external storage on the micro SD card. There's really no way to tell. It's different on a per game basis, and it's up to the developer to decide. How would one know if the video on the 4K Fire TV is in 4K? Like when I use the Amazon app or YouTube app, for example, I have a Dell 4K monitor. There's no real easy way to tell, unfortunately. For some of Amazon's videos, they'll actually put it in the title where it'll say that it's a UHD video. I know if the Fire TV itself detects that you've connected it to a 4K display, you'll get a separate column of content on the home screen that's like highlighted 4K content. So that's the best way to browse the 4K available content, is through that like separate column of content on the home screen. As far as when you're actually playing a video, the only real surefire way to tell is if you pause the video, or if you bring up the actual like menu interface while it's playing, in the bottom left there'll be a little UHD 4K icon there. It'll actually be there'll be no icon if it's not HD. There'll be an HD icon if it is, and there'll be a 4K icon to let you know that the video is streaming in 4K. That's really the only way to know if you're actually getting a 4K video stream, is when you pause the video, or while you're playing it, like when you fast forward or rewind, you'll see in the bottom left of the screen, in the kind of playback menu options, you'll see a 4K indicator there. Next question here is from Artemis. They say, do you think the new add-on subscriptions will reduce the amount of free Prime content in the future? So that's a really good question. I've seen that concern a few times in the comments of my posts, where people think that this new add-on service is going to basically, you know, be the end of Prime, or you know, Amazon is going to start charging people for the content they'd normally get through Prime. Personally, I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think there's a worry there. The one thing people overlook is that this new add-on service, it requires Prime. And Amazon did not have to do that. They didn't have to require Prime membership to access this add-on service. I think the reason they did that is because Prime is their focus. You know, it's been very clear. They've actually said it outright in their like shareholder meetings, where getting Prime members is one of their biggest focuses right now. And so it doesn't make sense that they would reduce the amount of Prime content to try to push this add-on service. I have a feeling it's the other way around, where this add-on service is trying to increase Prime membership and try to increase people who are enjoying the Prime content. Now, I don't think actually Amazon is going to make a lot of money off of this add-on service. I have a feeling that their cut, which they haven't really announced what it is, but I have a feeling their cut of the subscription is probably just barely enough to cover their bandwidth fees and their, you know, their expenses of charging people and the customer service involved and all that stuff. I think they want as much content to come to Amazon as possible so that people have a reason to subscribe to Prime. And so I don't think that Prime's library will be reduced so that Amazon can try to charge more for add-on services like this. I think this is just a way for them to attract more content owners into the Prime ecosystem, so to make Prime again the focus of everything. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. Again, we have no way to know for sure, but in my opinion, I don't think that's going to be the case. Next question here is from G. He says, so I put a 32 gigabyte card into my AFTV 2, but what can I do with it? I will never run out of the internal space as I do not play games. Can I play movies and music from it? Yeah, that's actually interesting. There's not much reason to expand your internal storage, actually, unless you have a lot of apps. That's really the number one reason to actually put in a micro SD card. But like you said, the other reason would be to play content off of that external storage. So the Fire TV itself, by default, does not have a way to access movies or music that's stored on external storage. You have to actually install apps that can access that content. The most common app that I mentioned many times is Kodi. It's a very full-featured media library, media player, and so that can fully access content that's stored on the micro SD card or USB drives. If that's not what you're interested in, if you just have a few files here and there that you might want to play off of the micro SD slot or USB slot, I would suggest something like ES File Explorer. It's just like a file browser and it has media playback capabilities, and that actually is available in the Fire TV App Store. You don't actually have to sideload like you do with Kodi. So if you're just looking to play a few files here and there, or maybe a few MP3s, definitely give like ES File Explorer a look. If you're looking at playing a bigger library of files off of external storage, then look at something like Kodi, because it's like a full featured thing where it'll organize your library and you can sort through it nicely. It'll show you cover art for any video files you have, that sort of stuff. All right, next question's here from Lewis. He says, I would love to see HBO Now and Netflix come to the Amazon add-on Prime program. Like, this all would be together in one place and in one app on other devices. I guess Netflix won't happen. What do you think about the changes for HBO? I mean, you can already subscribe via Amazon, I believe. What would be against it for HBO? I guess 99% of the people using Amazon TV are Prime members anyway. I don't think it's 99% of Prime members. I think Amazon wishes that it was about 99%, but definitely it's probably pretty high, you know, higher than average. But I don't think services like HBO and Netflix will be coming to this add-on service. Maybe HBO, I would say definitely not Netflix. But the main reason I don't think they'll be coming is because they're really big services. They can do this on their own. They don't need to share that revenue from subscribers with Amazon. That's essentially what they'd be losing. You know, the main thing HBO and Netflix lose by partnering with Amazon and getting involved with this add-on service is the sharing that subscription fee. It's possible Amazon would cut a deal with them to where they would take nothing and yet stream all the content for them. I highly doubt it, because bandwidth bills are pretty huge, and you know, online media accounts for 70% of all internet bandwidth these days. So I doubt that would ever happen. Again, like I was mentioning, this service is more for smaller niche content owners, content providers that can't necessarily just handle everything themselves and benefit from someone like Amazon handling all the backend stuff, handling all the subscription stuff, handling all the customer service, handling all the app development. I mean, all the different places that Amazon Video is available on, this service is essentially available on now. And that's what the big benefit is to content owners. And HBO Now and Netflix, they can do all that stuff themselves. So I don't see those services coming to this anytime soon. Maybe HBO, maybe not. But we'll have to wait and see. Who knows? Next question from Lewis. He says, the data cap problem seems to be getting bigger and bigger by the day, and the Comcast seems to get away with it because they have no competition. How come there is no competition? In Europe, the owners of the infrastructure have to allow competition to use it. Is it different in the US? It's a great opportunity for Google Fiber, isn't it? I think the strategy of the Comcast to introduce data caps, charge a lot of money for unlimited internet usage, will only benefit them in the short term, but hurt them in the long term. What do you think? Maybe Amazon should start their own internet service like Google. Yeah, that'd actually be pretty cool if Amazon started their own ISP. I doubt something like that will be happening. I mean, I don't know the legality around starting an ISP and all that stuff, but I imagine cost is the biggest reason why there are no competition. So in the US, It's not the city or the government that pays for the actual piping of wires through the streets and you know, to the homes. The actual ISPs pay for that, and they run all those cables. Right now it's fiber. They pay to run all of that underground. They, you know, it's not the city. Sometimes they'll get a little cut from city taxes or something like that, or the city will chip in to bring maybe some, you know, faster internet to the city. But for the most part, it's the ISPs that pay for all that themselves. And I can only imagine how hugely expensive that is. And that's probably the main reason we don't see that competition in the US. In bigger cities, it's probably more likely, you know, the bigger cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, any big area, you'll get a lot more competition there. I know, you know, in my area here, I'm like 20 minutes outside of Los Angeles. I've got two major options, Charter, AT&T, and then more so coming, I keep hearing Verizon is going to bring their Fios service, you know, but smaller areas, you're lucky to get one good internet service provider in the US. And that's really just because of how expensive it is to lay that out. The data cap thing, again, they can get away with it because, like you said, there is no competition, and it's unfortunate. Hopefully there'll be more regulations that kind of force them to change things up, but that's just the way it is in the US. We've got a question here from Twitter from Steve Klein. He says, what is the proper way to eject a USB drive from the Fire TV? So for USB drives, it depends on whether you have the first gen Fire TV or the second gen Fire TV. On the first gen Fire TV, the OS actually detects it being mounted, and so it'll actually show up in the settings. So if you go to settings, system, storage, you'll see the USB drive show up there, and then from there you can hit eject. On the second gen Fire TV, it's a little weird because even though USB drives are supported on the second gen Fire TV, they're not actually built into the OS's interface in any way. So when you plug in a USB drive on the second gen Fire TV, it doesn't actually show you that it's mounted or prompt you that it's mounted the same way it does on the first gen Fire TV. But there's actually no way to eject that drive. So my suggestion is make sure any software, any apps that are accessing that drive are force quitted, and then just pull the drive out. The only thing you have to worry about is data corruption on the drive if something is actively writing to the device. As long as the apps that were accessing that drive are not accessing it anymore, you should be fine just pulling it out. But unfortunately, Amazon is not supporting USB drives in the interface, so there's no actual way to eject them safely from there. Next question here is from Vulcan195. He says, on my Samsung TV native Amazon app, the cover art shows whether a title is in HD and whether it's in Dolby 5.1. Fire TV does none of that. One has to jump through hoops to figure out that info. When a title is Ultra 4K, the cover art shows that. So why not display HD 5.1 on the top left of the cover art to make life easy for us? Yeah, I agree. I would love to see an easier way to see what kind of audio is on the device or on the video that you want to watch. But unfortunately, similar to the question that I answered previously, people like you and me who are kind of, you know, audiophiles, videophiles, who really care about those extra features like 5.1 audio and that sort of stuff, we're a rare breed. And Amazon knows this. You know, the majority of the people using Fire TVs, I'm sure, are watching it and listening to it just through the speakers on their TV. I would expect that number would be maybe like 90% of people are doing it that way. And so something like, you know, showing what type of audio a video has, since it doesn't affect the majority of people actually consuming the content, that's probably why Amazon doesn't bother, you know, cluttering the interface. I know if you actually go into the video details, usually you'll see a little indicator there of what kind of audio it is, but even there it's kind of hit or miss. I've actually noticed sometimes when you load it up it shows it, but sometimes on the same exact video file it just doesn't show it. It's really weird. But the best answer to your question is why they don't do that is just because most of the people who are consuming this data and using these devices honestly don't care. I would recommend contacting Amazon, letting them know why that isn't there and that's a feature that you would like to see, because if enough people contact them about it, that's when they'll pay attention and actually add something like that. Next question here is from Stank. He says, thanks for all the news this week. This doesn't really pertain to AFTV, but since I have such a love for Fire TV, Kodi, and their apps, I've thought about tinkering around programming. I know you have software programming experience, so what should a somewhat tech-savvy adult beginner start with in your opinion? That's a really interesting question. I mean, I'm more happy to discuss kind of techie related questions like this that aren't pertaining exactly to the Fire TV. I would say mostly it depends on what you're interested in programming for? Do you want to do web-based programming? Are you interested in doing stuff that you can access through a browser? Or are you more interested in doing app-based programming, something you can access through a Fire TV, for example, or a mobile device? You know, those are probably the two hottest programming categories right now, web-based or a mobile app type-based programming. And honestly, I think the best way to learn is to look at examples. So if you're interested in like Fire TV programming, for example, look at like beginner guides for, you know, creating your first app and just get in there, set up the programming interface for yourself. You know, Android has their Android Studio program. It's free, and that's where you do your programming there. And then usually you can download somebody else's like beginner app. And I always think that getting into an app and looking at code and maybe tweaking, changing something and seeing how that reflects in the actual application or the program, that's the best way to learn. I don't recommend picking up a book and trying to learn programming that way or taking a course. I mean, there are a lot of good videos on YouTube, but really just getting in there, looking at some example, some very basic, simple example, and just making a small change and seeing how that affects it. That's honestly, I think, the best way to program. If you're looking at like web-based stuff, I would say look into JavaScript. It's very powerful for online stuff. And again, it's very easy to get into. You don't even need like a programming application to use. You could just use Notepad or any text editor to modify, you know, JavaScript code. And again, you can find little examples of JavaScript, see how it works, learn that way, and make a change here and there. That's honestly how I started programming, you know, before I actually had formal, you know, education. I mean, I went to college, I have a computer engineering degree, and then I worked in as a software engineer for 7 years. And so I do have that formal experience. But before that, I was just looking at examples of code, changing it here and there just to kind of suit my needs. And that's how I would recommend if you're interested in getting into programming, look at little guides like that have sample code that you can just kind of play with. So next comments here are from Trox. He's talking about the Synology network attached storage that I mentioned a few episodes ago. Somebody asked me what was on my Christmas wish list or something like that. And I mentioned that I was looking at getting one of these kind of network NAS drives from Synology. And he mentioned that he did some testing with them, trying the Plex server capabilities of these devices. So he compared it to streaming through a PC running Plex or streaming through these NAS Synology drives running Plex. And he found that the Synology ones could not handle multiple streams. And that's true. I would totally expect that. So the one thing to keep in mind is with Plex, they actually have to do some live transcoding of these files to be able to get them to the Plex app. And so for my case, since I don't really use Plex, I use Kodi, I would only use these drives basically as a NAS to access the files. I would not actually use the Plex capabilities. So the actual CPU of the Synology drive is not as important to me as maybe somebody who's running Plex. That's definitely something to worry about there. If you're a heavy Plex user and you have multiple devices in the house that are streaming simultaneously, your best bet is to actually have a pretty strong, dedicated PC acting as the Plex server as opposed to one of these Synology NAS drives. But really, thanks, Trox, for this info about it. People, I'll put a link in the show notes to this comment specifically because it's really helpful for those who are thinking of changing their Plex setup and maybe buying one of these NAS devices. And next question here is from Dan. He says, first gen Fire TV has Watch ABC app. Why not second gen Fire TV? A relative has Watch ABC app on her first gen Fire TV, and I can't download the app on my second gen Fire TV. This mostly has to do with the fact that the first gen Fire TV is still running the older version of Fire OS, Fire OS 3, which is based on Android 4.2.2, whereas the new Fire TV is running Fire OS 5, which is based on Android 5.1. And so my guess is that ABC has just been lazy and has not tested their app on the new device yet. There's also a chance that there's a DRM issue. Most likely it has to do with the fact that the two devices currently are running different Fire OS versions. Next month in January, we're expecting Fire OS 5 to come to the first gen Fire TV. And so at that point, all of these apps that have kind of been lazy right now and haven't tested their apps on the new OS, they are going to kind of be forced to update or be left behind. And so I would expect that Watch ABC will work on the second gen Fire TV come next month, when basically they're going to be forced to update or they're just not going to work at all. All right, last question here from Steve. He asks on Twitter, do you leave the Logitech keyboard dongle in the USB port or do you remove it regularly? I personally remove it regularly only because I actually have many Fire TV devices that I'm constantly testing on and working on, just, you know, to write the articles for the site. And so I only have the one keyboard on my desk. And so then I remove the dongle and actually just move it from one to one. But that said, on my main primary Fire TV that's connected to my main TV that I don't actually use for writing articles for the site, I do leave it on there just all the time. There's no harm in leaving it on there. The K400 keyboard, which is the one that Steve is talking about here, it has a physical on-off switch. So just as long as you turn that off, you're fine there. There's no reason to remove the actual USB dongle from the actual Fire TV. One reason you might be asking is because you might be thinking that you have to remove the dongle to connect a USB drive to the Fire TV. But if you're not aware, or if the people listening are not aware, you can connect a USB hub to the Fire TV. And so I have a very simple USB hub connected to my main Fire TV in my living room. And with that, I have a USB drive connected to that, and I have the dongle connected at the same time. They both work just fine. All right, that'll conclude the 19th episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thanks again for watching and for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, I really love if you hit that like button. It really helps the channel. If you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AFTV News, I'd love if you subscribe there. I'm hoping to get a lot more video content onto there. As always, you can access the stream either through the RSS feed or through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn. I'll be on Google Play very soon once they launch their podcast section. So you can find it all over the place. Love if you guys can subscribe. I stream live every Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. So if you want to watch live, I love interacting with everybody. They ask questions live on Twitter, and I try to answer questions live through that. There's a lot more that goes on live than you see in the edited version. I usually cut out maybe half the content just to kind of trim it down to about an hour, but I usually stream for about 2 hours. So come watch live if you can. Always love the people who are watching live. Really appreciate their input and the interaction I get there. Again, just to briefly mention, last 2 weeks of December, I probably won't have a podcast out, but next week definitely will have one. So I'll catch you then.